And good afternoon and welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for joining us as we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. And we also are streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and you can hear this program once it's aired. You can hear it probably 15, 20 minutes after the broadcast at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page where we archive all of our programs. So we encourage you to listen to this program and then share it with your friends, family, and whoever you might think would be interested in it. We also encourage you to touch base with us via email, richard@richarddugan.com. That's richard@richarddugan.com, because we'd like to hear from you, get your ideas, your feelings about what we're doing here. And of course, what we're doing here is trying to provide you with different perspectives, different ideas, different points of view on that circle, if you will, the circle of life, those different points. There's an event going on in the middle of that circle, and you're watching it, and everybody else is too. And everybody else has a different point of view. So what we try to do is bring you those different points of view. Today is no different. Why would it be, since this is Tell Me Your Story? I have in studio with me, he is a member of the Christian Science Church, and we are going to talk today with Tom McElroy. He is also part of the Christian Science Board of Lectureship out of Boston, Massachusetts, and he is in Santa Barbara as we speak to talk about discovering the real you. Tom, welcome to our program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Hi, happy to be here.
Now, you also have, and I never know exactly how to phrase this, and I don't know if this tells my age and my resistance to the new terminology of the technology. I have archives. Mm-hmm. I record these programs, and I upload them to the website that I have, and people can go there and click the play button to listen, or they can right-click and save target as and download the archives.
Right.
You have podcasts.
Right.
What's the difference?
I don't know that there necessarily is a difference.
Okay.
Yeah. There are audio broadcasts that are available on the web. I think the only difference is that this is going to go on the radio,
mm-hmm.
and a podcast is something that is built just for the internet.
And these particular podcasts have a particular title. It's the Daily Lift. I happen to go on your website and listen to a few of those.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've been a part of a number of different podcasts, and they vary. The Daily Lift ones that you're talking about are done by a whole group of people, and I've participated. So
mm-hmm.
maybe once every month or a couple months, you know, I'll put my little Daily Lift in there. And the Daily Lifts are about a minute and a half or 2 minutes of just a spiritual thought for the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
And very interesting and very enlightening as well. And, of course, we're here today to talk primarily on discovering the real you. That seems to be a theme that's coming through a lot of my guests here in the spring of 2011, that it's one of the keys to sort of overcoming the challenges in our lives, because if we don't know who we are, we can't stop reacting and start acting, if you will, towards those challenges. The difference being that the acting is a new way of responding to those challenges, whereas the reacting,
right.
it's repetitive. It's like watching
right.
the same
right.
movie over and over again, expecting
right.
a different ending.
Yeah, and I think we play out roles, and the idea of getting a concept of the real you, of an identity that's somehow separate from just the stuff that would claim to shape our lives, who we are, what we're going to become, what those patterns are that we're going to play out, what those roles are, what those masks are that we're going to wear. In as much as we can get beneath the surface of that to something that's a little steadier, a little more consistent, I would say even untouched
mm-hmm.
by that. That to me is, as you were saying, kind of a key concept, a core idea necessary for breaking free from patterns that we don't want to be part of anymore.
And of course, the first step is acknowledging the fact that we don't want to be a part of them anymore.
That's true.
It's becoming conscious of the
right.
fact that my life just isn't working and I don't know why.
Right, right. Well, I think, you know, there's things in life that push us when we hit a brick wall, when we get to a point where we're just not feeling comfortable anymore, and we feel so trapped. We feel like maybe that little dog that chases its tail round and round in a circle, and we start going, I'm tired. I don't want to be part of this anymore.
Yeah.
That compels us to look for something different. That's when we go to the bookstore and we start looking for new ideas, or we go to a church, we start looking for new ideas, we talk to friends, whatever, go on the internet. And at the same time, I think there's, without getting to that point where we're hitting a brick wall, without always having to be at that point where we're smashing up against something before we look for a new perspective, you know, Christ Jesus said the great commandment, as you, if you will, that many people refer to from the Bible is love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's one thing that I think if we keep that at the forefront of thought, that's something that at the same time compels us to make change without the kind of suffering aspect, without the I'm smashing up against the wall, now I'm looking for change. It's I actually love life, I love truth, I love my fellow man enough to be looking for that new perspective constantly.
And that seems as though it's more difficult in this day and time, not only as far as technology, but also as far as events that we've seen unfold as we're talking just in the last few weeks, let alone months and or years. It's as if we're getting bombarded almost daily by events that we've never seen before,
sure,
that we may, in some instances, we've never experienced before. And they're, some might even call them horrific.
Right.
They're huge.
Right.
And that presents a whole nother element in the mix that I can handle. I was late with my rent payment, and and now I've got to deal with the landlord, or I just overdrafted my account, and a lot of the stuff does have to do with money. But then there are also relationship issues, job issues, just social issues with friends and family. I forgot to call my dad or my mom. I told him I was going to do this. Now it's dealing with global events on a scale that's so different, and it's not even the actual event. It's the way that it's being, what's the word I want, almost forced upon us, through, especially through the media, but through the technology in general.
Right. Yeah, well, I think you make a good point, and it comes back a little bit to that idea, if we're actively looking for something different, part of the beauty of media today is that there's a lot that's available that has never been available before. And we see the good things that people are doing with that, the doors that that's opening. You know, before it was like you had only so many channels and you kind of had to take what you were fed. Now it's overload.
Yeah.
So, you know, like any human condition, there's sort of pros and cons to
feast
both,
or famine.
Right. So on the one hand, there's so much of it bombarding us that that it's, if we're not actively looking, it's easy to just get swept up in a current that's probably stronger than ever, and to let that mold and shape what we're thinking and what our perspective is. At the same time, if we are making conscious choices, I think there is more available to us than has ever been available before, and that's a beautiful thing.
Now, when you talk about discovering the real you, and again, as you say this, you're referring to each one of us as individuals, how do we, I guess it's a twofold thing here that I'm asking. It's, on the one hand, how do we begin the process of discovering who we really are?
Yeah.
And two is, how do we know when we've discovered who we really are? How do we know when we finally made it?
Right. Well, two questions there. Definitely, to answer the second one first, at least in part, I don't know. You know, there's the song, Life's a Journey, not a Destination.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that can sound cliche, I know. But to some respect, I'm not sure if there is kind of this endpoint, this we've arrived, we're there.
Okay.
To me, it comes back to the first question, and it answers the second at the same time. I think part of getting to know ourselves is getting to know our creator, getting to know our source. You can't really know who you are unless you know where you came from. It's a little bit like DNA, if you will. You know, we say that these are the building blocks that essentially shape certain aspects of our lives, who we're going to become, our what we're predisposed to, and so forth. Well, I think each of us has a spiritual DNA. And if we don't know anything about our source, anything about the building blocks that we're made out of, anything that's causing us to be right here and now today from a spiritual basis, then I'm not sure we know we're there. At the same time, kind of going back to the second question, the more we find out about this spiritual source, who we are, and I call that God, the more we know who we are. But that source to me is infinite. So the fact that we're made from this source, that we are the emanation of mm-hmm. this source, that we are, in Bible language, made in the image and likeness of God, to me says that, you know, maybe it's not we just kind of arrive at a full understanding of our finite being. Maybe it's if we emanate from an infinite being, then maybe this is a journey that goes on for a long time. Maybe there's not a we've arrived kind of a thing.
And of course, as I've spoken many times on this program about the various metaphors, if you will, I was speaking on one program, we were talking about the cosmos and the subatomic levels and how similar they are. When you start looking at it, first of all, you notice, you've heard the phrase that it's the space between the particles that
right.
makes up what really is.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there's space between the subatomic particles.
Right.
From our perspective, not much.
Yeah.
But from a percentage standpoint or a proportional standpoint, it's probably the same space as between the stars and the planets in the universe. So
right.
there's a correlation there.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying, I think, is very valid, that if we choose to accept that infinite aspect of our Creator, whatever name we choose to give it,
yeah.
as the higher power,
yeah.
the force that created us,
yeah.
and it's infinite, well, we were created from infinitesimal. Thank you. So we, too, must be.
Yeah.
Infinitesimal as well.
Yeah.
I want to talk more about you and the subject of finding the real you as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And understanding is what it's all about here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you for staying tuned as we talk with Tom McElroy, and he is here in Santa Barbara, and he is going to be giving a talk about the discovering the real you, and basically a better understanding of our spiritual identity sets us free from limitations. And I'd have to say that as we move forward in this program, that that very word, limitations,
yeah.
is like just it is branded, it's burned
yeah.
into the brains, the psyche of every human being on the planet.
Sure.
In that there are limitations.
Yeah.
We can only go so far,
yeah. Yeah.
which is so contrary to what we just ended the last segment with
yeah.
about an infinite creator.
Right, right.
And that we're supposed to be created in his image or her image or their image.
Yeah, yeah. I think being created in the image of this infinite source, emanating from this infinite source, doesn't mean we're kind of this identity without an identity, so to speak, just
mm-hmm.
kind of floating around in the cosmos.
Right.
I think that we come from that says that we have infinite capacity. But we also, it also to me means we have infinite capacity for complete uniqueness and individuality. You know, the human scene is something, there isn't really anything that you or I could do today that hasn't been done before, whether it be it good, be it bad.
Yeah.
You know, there's naturally, inherently limitations, you know, from the human perspective. And it just seems to me that it's almost like the process of aging on this planet is the process of taking on more and more limitations. You know, children think they're free. You ask them, what do you want to be when you grow up? I had a little boy, a friend of mine, he's about 3 years old, out of the blue, he says to me, I want to be everything when I grow up. And he said, even a painter, you know? And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, that's the sky's the limit kind of an attitude. Yeah. And then after a while, we take on more and more. We're educated, you know, but falsely. It's a mm-hmm. false education from my point of view.
Yeah.
You know, that says, well, your past history means this, your economic status means this, your family means this, where you live in the world means this, and what you look like, on and on and on and on and on. And that just kind of accumulates over time till we feel railroaded into something that's not even us, and we don't feel comfortable with that. Of course we don't. It's like putting on shoes that don't fit.
Yeah.
You know, an infinite being putting on something that is tight and constraining isn't comfortable. And that is, we were talking before, that's those moments when we start to feel uncomfortable is what compels us to look outward. And to me, what we're looking for is something that, in as much as we feel these constraints, they're in belief, though. They're not something that has actually ever touched the spiritual identity that exists in a state that is completely free from those limitations. You know, for example, the people who lived on the planet and thought the Earth was flat X amount 100 years ago, you know, they lived in a very small world. There's a limitation. They believed the world was flat, so they didn't go anywhere. They literally experienced the effects of a flat Earth because they believed that the Earth was flat.
Yeah.
But when someone had the first of the understanding, or at least the inkling of the understanding that there was something else, that the world was round, that empowered them to act differently, to discover more, and to experience the effects of a round Earth.
Right.
And so what's in belief counts. It's important because it does affect what we experience in life. But at the same time, millions of people on the planet believing that the Earth was flat never could have made it flat. It was always round.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't heal a flat Earth and make it become a round Earth.
Or inflate it, or anything.
And so that, to me, that's what we're talking about here with spiritual identity. We're discovering something that's already there that is completely untouched by the false education that we've taken on over time.
Yeah, I find it fascinating that I've used this analogy before, that it's fascinating to me that science says that they have discovered these laws of the universe. And I use the add to that, that let's just say for the sake of argument that there are a billion laws of the universe.
Right.
Man has discovered 10 and says, and we know it all.
Right.
And so it's even in my conversations with Greg Braden and his book that he wrote, Spontaneous Healing of Belief, he talked about that. And what you're discussing right now is transforming belief into knowledge.
Yeah.
I even think of even the science fiction writers, for example, that like Jules Verne, way before his time, was writing about us going to the moon.
Right.
You know, and we did that.
Right.
We transformed fantasy, if you will, or belief.
Yeah.
You know, into reality.
Yeah.
You know, where did the Wright brothers get that idea of flying in the first place, which was the first step?
Right.
Actually, probably Jules Verne's, and just the concept in the mind was the beginning of that process.
And yet the laws of aerodynamics were always there.
All of that has always been there. It's not, and that's what's always fascinated me about people who go out and try to find, who go out and get copyrights or patents or any way of securing what they refer to as intellectual property rights.
Right.
It's like, it doesn't belong to you anyway. It's always been there. You just discovered it for yourself.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, and that, to me, I look at Jesus as someone who was a way shower, someone that said, Jesus said, I'm the way, the path, the life. And to me, that says, what does that say then about my life? If Jesus says, I am the life and I am the way, well, what does that say about the way that I'm following? What am I trying to discover here?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, he didn't accept limitations on anybody. It didn't matter what their past history was, how much of a sinner they were, how long they'd been sick, how old they were, what nationality they were, how much, all those things. You see examples in the Bible of people of all different backgrounds having gone through all kinds of different stuff. Getting this bigger picture, this vision of the science of God, I would call it, the laws of God, which are what maintain and protect, sustain and create this spiritual identity, this life that God has created. And here's Jesus, from my point of view, saying, look, guys, here's the good news. The gospel means good news. Here's the good news, everybody. You're not what you thought you were. Yeah. God isn't what you thought he was, she was. It is. It's going on now, this life that God created. The laws of God are here. They're, you know, and this is all about something much bigger than you ever realized, and I'm going to prove it to you. And like the Wright brothers or anyone else who discovered these laws, I think Jesus came equipped to know them, and his purpose was to prove them to us, and not just say, hey, I'm the magic man, you know, I can do this, but you can't.
Yeah.
To me, saying that I am the way says to me, you know, and he said it, in no uncertain terms to his disciples, you got to go out and do what I've done. And in fact, he even said, for those who follow me after time, you'll do even greater things than I've done.
That was the thought that was right on my mind, because I think about that in terms of where we are today, which doesn't seem to be all that much different than even his day.
Right.
In that we're really not.
No.
We really haven't
as
fulfilled
human beings,
that.
Right.
Because of that branding.
Yeah.
That we've had.
I agree.
From our ancestors.
I agree. And it takes shapes in all kinds of different forms and so forth, you know. So the surface stuff has changed a lot. But it's very, you know, it's like saying I went to see a movie, a romantic comedy, or I saw a movie that was a, you know, a thriller or whatever, but you were still in the movie theater. You never walked out.
You never left.
You never caught a glimpse of what was really going on outside the theater. The reality.
Yeah. Who is Tom McElroy?
Who is Tom McElroy?
Or let me rephrase it. Who is the real Tom? Will the real Tom McElroy please stand up?
You know, as the real Tom McElroy, you know, I consider myself just, you know, part of the same brotherhood, sisterhood as everyone else here. I don't consider myself special as a human being, but I love the promise of what I can be and what I'm constantly proving a little bit more of each day in my life as a child of God. And in that same way, I am as excited and as grateful and as interested in my brothers and sisters because I know, again, that they're coming from that same source. So to me, it's not just a spiritual discovery of myself and who am I. It's kind of like it's big picture. It's mankind. What am I finding? If I see limitations in my brother, I find them in myself. You know, anything I find, you know, Paul said in the Bible, he talked about being a law unto yourself. And to me, that's that idea of in as much as I accept, you know, limitations in myself, I'm going to see it all around me and vice versa. That I condemn my brother for, I see it in me. So I see us as one, as united, as absolutely distinct and individual and unique, but as part of this one big family.
You know, that raises the perspective that I've talked about many times. The trillions of cells in our body, and I've asked the question of people, under what system, shall we say system of government, do the cells of our body operate? And you can already throw democracy out, because if they operated under a democratic form of government,
right,
the body would cease to exist,
right,
because everybody would want every cell would want its own individuality, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to come up, someone says, well, you need to come up with a word to describe it. And of course, the only one I came up with at the time was interdependentism, because that's what it is. I mean, yes, there are skin cells and heart cells and brain cells and eye cells, et cetera, et cetera. So from that standpoint, you might say they have individual identity as to what part of the body they are,
right,
and carrying out whatever functions that they carry out.
Right.
But they have to collectively work together in order for the whole to function.
Right.
And when you talk about being unique and a unique individual, you're not necessarily saying, this is sort of a question, you're not necessarily saying that you're going to go off and just do your own thing,
right,
oblivious to or without a care for the rest of the world.
Right. No, not at all. And what you're saying to me is a microcosmic analogy of the same thing that's in the Bible. When again, I think it's Paul who talks about us all being parts of the body of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I heard an analogy actually by the woman who wrote the book Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. As you've had some folks on the show before, I know, who have been Christian Science practitioners and lecturers, as I am. Who have talked about this book, which is the sort of the textbook of Christian Science, this approach to the Bible, this approach to taking the message of the Bible and you know, finding ways to live it practically as part of, you know, your everyday life.
Yeah.
And her analogy was that God is the Son. Christ as a concept is the fullness of God, the divinity of God expressed, and it's kind of like all the rays of the sun combined. And then each ray, though, is like an individual, you know, child of God. And so each ray, of course, has within it nothing but the properties that it has derived from the sun. And yet no rays, they don't bump into each other. They each have a unique purpose. They comprise or at least emanate from the same source, from the whole, but neither are they in competition with each other, nor are they kind of off on their own mission, having come from their own source with their own path unrelated to the other.
Right. I'd heard that there was a study done some years ago trying to determine the the efficiency or effectiveness, not so much efficiency, but the effectiveness between cooperation and competition.
Mm.
And what they found, contrary to what we are taught in this society, is that cooperation was much more effective.
Right.
It produced more. The people were happier than those who were in competition.
Right, right.
And so when I start looking at all of these things that we've just been talking about in the last, say, 5 minutes or so, the thing that comes to mind is that the reason why we are having the problems that we are having as human beings is because we are in direct opposition,
right,
if you will,
yeah,
to the laws of nature, the laws of the universe, the law,
right,
you know, and not to, again, get religious per se,
yeah,
but when you start taking a look at those kinds of things, you don't see animals competing,
yeah,
in the context in which human beings compete.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's. I don't think we're built for greed. I don't think we're built for hate. I don't think we're built for selfishness.
And yet there are those who say, "Well, but that's just a part of man."
Right. Sure. Well, you know, I wouldn't disagree that it's part of human nature, but I think that our nature goes deeper than that. You know, I think that as again, this comes back to the core concept we're talking about today, is that each of us has a spiritual nature, and that stuff doesn't fit. It doesn't fit us. I don't know anyone who's happy or successful or content or satisfied in the long term with living out that kind of mentality, living out from those kinds of motives and acting on them. And there's certainly no society or community or family that I've ever seen or been aware of in history, in any culture, that has succeeded or found, you know, permanency and satisfaction working with, you know, those kinds of things as the core ideals. So there's something there that says, look, this just doesn't work, you know. And so the question to me is, why not? And maybe the even better question is, what does work, and where does it come from? Because, again, coming back to our core concept, I've worked as a chaplain in the Los Angeles County jails for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
When I started traveling and doing the lecturing, I stepped back from that. But I worked in the men's facilities, the women's, the youth probation camps. And I saw again and again the folks that had, they'd kind of tried a lot of different paths, a lot of different things, many of them, and they hit that brick wall. They have that moment of, okay, I'm looking for something else. They're not willing to, you have some that come out who are just kind of will come to any service, talk to anyone they can and say whatever you want to hear. But there's also a lot of folks there who are at rock bottom who are looking for something really practical, something that's really going to make a difference. And they won't kind of BS you about, if they believe you or just want to be nice to you. They're only going to accept what you have to say if it's real, because they don't have time to play around with, just fancy ideas that sound good on, you know, for Sunday and make you kind of feel good, but don't actually make a difference in your life. And so this to me is where practical spirituality comes in. You know, if folks who have kind of tried it a lot of different ways, with the greed, with the selfishness, with the the extremes of human nature, get to that point where they start looking for something different and they discover more about their spiritual identity. They discover more about the facts of who they are, who they always have been, beneath the surface of all these masks and these kind of inauthentic paths of trial, and that actually makes a difference. That what they discover there transforms their experience. That there's a cause and effect relationship between what they think and what they, and where they go and what they're capable of doing. If you, I'll tell you a quick story if you have a second.
Sure.
It's one of my favorites, because you see examples of transformation over time, and that's probably more normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most of us are on a long journey.
Yeah.
Once in a while, you see the ones that just kind of happen almost right in front of your face, and that's incredible, and it's heartening, and it sort of proves that you're on the right track. I had one where I was working in a probation camp, and I used to do a Bible study there, and I had a group of maybe 15 boys that would come in, and there's always the one kid who was the troublemaker who sat in the back of the class on the far side, and he would just do little things to disturb the other boys, to get their attention, A lot of them came from gangs and had kind of a gang speak, and so he would say things that I wouldn't even understand, but the other boys would pick up on, and it would really rile them up because maybe they came from conflicting neighborhoods or whatever. And so one time, though, I brought this list of seven names for God, and this comes from the definition of God that Mary Baker Eddy uses in her book, Science and Health, The Key to the Scriptures, and it's just part of it, but she kind of takes all the qualities and characteristics of God in the Bible and puts them into seven names for God: truth, life, love, principle, soul, spirit, and mind. So this list had seven names for God and probably 20 qualities or characteristics under each name. I handed this out to all the boys, and the one guy, the troublemaker kid, he was the one that was most interested in it, because we'd been talking about this concept of, if we're made in the image and likeness of God, and God is truth, then what does that say about you? It says that you're inherently truthful, that you're inherently honest. If God is mine, the source of all intelligence and wisdom, what does that say about you? It says that you're not dumb. It says that you're capable. It says that you have built in within you, in your spiritual DNA, the capacity to understand the truth, to want the truth, to respond to the truth, and to be able to prove it for yourself, right? If you're made in the image and likeness of love, that means you're inherently loving, inherently loved, inherently lovable. And this boy, he was looking at this list, and you know, you can imagine if you have 20 adjectives after every name, there's a lot of vocabulary on there that maybe not everyone would understand. And so he kept asking me, well, what does this word mean? And I would explain it to him, and he'd look at me and he'd say, well, are you saying that's me? Mm-hmm. You're saying that comes from God, that's what God is, and then that's me too? And I would say, yeah, that's you. And his eyes would get big, and he'd smile for a second, but then he'd get real focused and serious again, and he'd look back at his paper, and he'd go to the very next word, and we're talking 70 words on this page, but he wanted to know what every single one was, because after every single one, he would ask me, are you saying that's me? And I would say, yeah, that's you. And again, and every time it was like a discovery. Mm-hmm. After every single word, you could see the gears turning, where he's identifying with this. He's realizing, and there's something within him, I don't know what he'd been told his life, but probably like most of those boys, he was told, you're no good, the world doesn't want you, you're not going to amount to anything, you've got nothing to contribute, the best you can do is try and stay out of everybody else's way in this world who are doing worthwhile things, and try not to get in too much trouble. But that all of a sudden he's hearing something different, maybe for the first time. And what was amazing was, well, the class ended and the custody officer came to take the other guys away, but he let this one boy stay with me so we could go through every single word on the list. Well, when he came back for the next Bible study, that boy was sitting right up front. And not only was he, you know, just well-behaved and that kind of a thing, he was on it. He was tuned in. He got it. It was just, you could see a whole transformation in the way he was looking at me, the way he was looking at the other boys, obviously the way he was thinking of himself. And what was great was when I would try and explain things, certain, you know, concepts from the class to the other boys, he'd be the one to jump in when maybe some of the other ones didn't understand and explain it to them kind of in their own language. And he had it. He got it. You know, it's not like I had it and none of the other boys did. It was clear that as he tuned in, he obviously had it too and had always had it. It mm-hmm. had always been there.
Yeah. But it had been covered over by all of the other stuff that he'd been told.
Right, right. You know, there's someone told me an analogy once. If you look out your window, it's been raining here today. I don't know if it will be raining by the time this airs. But if you imagine a plastic lawn chair kind of out the back, and if it was covered in rain, you might say that chair is wet. But scientifically speaking, the properties of plastic don't absorb water. You know, so the plastic on that chair, the chair itself is actually not wet. Mm-hmm. You know, the water's kind of on it, and we call it a wet chair. It
right.
looks like a wet chair to us.
Right.
But the fact is that the chair, the plastic of that chair isn't wet. It never penetrated. It never became it. Never became part of it. Never did anything to it.
Right.
And that, to me, is sort of an analogy for there's a lot of junk that gets piled on that we identify with in belief. But through, as you put it, no, you didn't use the word understanding. Knowledge.
Knowing.
Knowing.
Yeah.
Knowing. Through knowing, and I like that you said that, not just believing something else that's positive,
right, exactly.
but knowing what's
the
there.
Is another one, yeah.
Exactly, exactly. That's not what we're talking about, but we're talking about discovery.
Yeah.
Discovery of the laws, the facts of what's there and has always been there, and what that does
yeah.
tangibly, physically, practically, in daily life and experience.
Somebody said to me the other day, boy, you know, I wish that we could raise our kids without all of that junk so they could get a head start on living their life's purpose
yeah.
instead of spending half their lifetime, you know, unpiling all of the garbage that they were given over the years and then getting on with their life's purpose.
Right.
Well, you know, that would be nice.
Yeah.
It really would. You know, you made a comment that kind of hit me as far as part of this process of, you know, for me, for the last few months, I've kind of gotten in touch with this one aspect of my life when I was growing up was just to stay out of everybody's way.
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't in an effort to, okay, well, and then try to stay out of trouble. I wasn't interested in getting into trouble per se. But it was more than anything else, just staying out of everybody's way because I wasn't part of the group.
Yeah.
And so that's what I've done most of my life. Just, I go off and I do my own thing. I make things happen and just stay out of everybody's way.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm always, you know, looking around to make sure that there's nobody to my left or to my right, you know, so that I can start moving.
Mm.
That's one of the, and that's another aspect for me is just moving.
Yeah.
Physically.
Yeah.
And yet there are people out there who start, they might be texting, they might be on the cell phone, they might be looking off in the opposite direction and then they start walking
the
other way.
Right.
And it's like, how do you do that?
Right.
And do you do that in the car too?
Yeah. Well,
and I don't want to be around you if you do.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things that has kind of struck me is that for the better part of my life, at least my attitude, if you will, has been to just, you know, always, I'm always looking out for everybody else in that I don't want them to run into me, nor I to run into them in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
And part, for some reason, for a period of time around the holidays, 2010, I started getting upset at the rest of the world for not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my blood pressure went up and all of that stuff.
And
I think I've gotten a pretty good handle on that, primarily because I sort of realized that, oh, yeah, that's because I'm always trying to stand up everybody else's way.
Right.
And I expect them to do the same so that we don't have problems.
Right, right.
And that's part of the process of the self-discovery.
Sure it is.
Of discovering the real
me. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's all interconnected, right? I mean, you can't, as we were talking about before, you can't discover the real you without discovering the real source, without discovering the real interconnectedness. I mean, because it's all one.
Right.
So if I'm at the mall at Christmas time and I'm getting, you know, upset about all the people who are bustling about and bumping into each other, it's because I'm missing the real picture.
Yeah.
I'm not just my own little guy with my own little checklist of the little, you know, things I need to buy for the folks that, you know, will forget about it in a month and you know, and the paper that'll get thrown away and you know, so on and so forth. It's I am there for something bigger than that.
Yeah.
I am there for you know, to be the person that I've been created to be. I'm there to express this bigger purpose of not just moving my body, my cells, but living.
Yeah,
you know, living love, living harmony, living wisdom. And so in as much as I'm walking around, you know, the mall with these folks, if I am seeing in everybody else this interconnectedness, if I am loving my neighbor, and it sounds like some words that are easy to toss out, but if I'm walking around full of love, if I'm walking around full of a big picture perspective of the fact that each and every one of these individuals is the unique expression of God. If I'm looking for that, inevitably I'm also going to be discovering it.
Yeah.
Finding even just little pieces of it,
you
know, because how much can you know about a stranger? Well, you see things.
Yeah.
And if you're looking, you do find it because it is there and it's being expressed constantly. And all of a sudden you're in the middle of this brilliant, you know, kind of interchange, you're looking at all the other rays of the sun around you, if you will, and it's a totally different experience.
Yeah, it's extraordinary.
You feel different.
Yeah.
Everything looks different, and it was always there.
And it was always there, because if you start looking around for the bad stuff, we all know, oh, that's easy to find.
Yeah, sure.
That's easy. You don't have to look far.
And it's a repeating story, as we talked about before, too. It just repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats. The only thing that's interesting, the only thing that you can really discover is the stuff that's coming from this infinite source, which is fresh and new every day, because it's good, because it's God.
I'm curious as to how you wound up on this particular path.
It's a good question. You know, I don't know if I have a linear exact answer for you. I took studied philosophy when I was in college, I realized at that point that I really liked ideas and that I really liked people. And so I wanted to know more about how people thought and what they thought and why they thought. And I just really, you know, I visited all kinds of churches, all kinds of temples and, you know, you name it. I did a study abroad in China and Taoism, Buddhism and Kaodai and, you know, all kinds of different things. At the core of it, you know, I remember asking myself one time, you know, okay, here I am a philosophy major. I know how to make an argument for almost everything. I write papers frequently, you know, arguing a side that I don't even believe in, and I can make a good argument out of it. So what is truth? You know, because it can't just be whoever's shouting the loudest or whoever's even making the most logical argument. There has to be something more beyond that. And I remember pacing around a little carpet in my very tiny little dorm room, you know, sort of a 3 foot, you know, square carpet, round and round, and thinking, what do I know is true? In my heart of hearts, what do I really believe? And I came up with three things. One was, I believe there's a God. I believe that God is all good. And I believe that that God made me. And in my mind at that time, that also meant sort of mankind. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, okay, if I can say that that stuff is true, then everything that I'm going to believe, everything that I'm going to follow or work out from has to correspond with that premise. It has to match up, or if it doesn't, I don't care how good of an argument I can make, it's not going to work for me. And to me, results matter, you know? So if the results aren't, you know, again, if I can make an argument that this has to do with God or love, but it's not coming out that way, if it's not coming out loving, then I got to check something in my premise or in the process. And so to me, it's, you know, it's not, I don't feel like I'm quote unquote there yet, but I feel like it's been a kind of a path that continues to evolve for me. I feel like when I got out of school, I ended up in the finance industry and was doing pretty well at that. But at the same time, was doing this volunteer chaplain work I was telling you about. And I just felt like, yeah, you know, my goal here is to help people. But I loved what I was seeing spiritual ideas do more than anything else. I just felt like that was kind of the getting to the heart of the matter. Mm-hmm. And so after about 4 or 5 years of that, that's when I started thinking, I want this to be my full-time practice. I want this to be my full-time job. I want to work with these ideas. I want to work with people with these ideas and see what they can do.
I commend you for what you're doing and for the message that you're bringing in particular, because it seems right for right now in this time in which we live. And that always, there's that synchronicity, if you will. The only way that I will ever use the word as it is normally pronounced, coincidence, is to pronounce it coincidence.
Mm.
Because they're incidents
I like that.
That happen together for a reason. I was watching a news story about a particular event and having to do with the disappearance of a particular species of man. And the commentator made the comment, and we're going back potentially, you know, thousands of years.
Yeah.
And he says, and they disappeared for no apparent reason. And I'm sitting here going, are you crazy? What do you mean no apparent reason? There was a reason. You just don't know what it is.
Right, right.
So it should have been they disappeared for an unknown reason.
Yeah.
No apparent reason.
Right, right.
I always find, and I'm always listening for those kinds of things, those twists of the truth, if you will, or to get us to think one way or the other. And I wonder how many people are really, I mean, really listening.
No, it's true. It's true. Know? Well, and that to me is one of the first steps. If you don't even know what's happening, then you're not going to look for what the truth is. You just kind of accept, oh, no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Fair enough. You know, and you move on thinking that's it. But yeah, I agree. I think it's a skill.
Yeah.
I think it's a skill. And the more you're listening for it, the more you start to hear it all over the place. And the good thing is, though, that it makes you hungry. It makes you hungry for something a little more concrete, a little more real, a little more consistent than that.
We're going to continue our discussion with our guest here on the program, Tell Me Your Story, Tom McElroy, and we're going to find out more about how we can get in touch with him and also find out more about how we can discover the real us or the real you or the real me, depending upon how you want to phrase it. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story.
Understanding is what it's about. How well do you understand yourself? Tom McElroy, I really do appreciate the time that you've taken on the program today to share with us your perspectives and yourself. I'm curious, you know, you've shared a little bit about some of the things that you've done, primarily in, I guess, what you would call your ministry or calling, what have you. Mm-hmm. You certainly could have done a lot of other things in what I gather is still a relatively short life.
Yeah.
Why this? Why now?
You know, there's nothing more satisfying to me. I was just working on a new talk, actually, about, you know, about kind of choosing how you want to help the world and what you want to, you know, what is the most effective cause out there or organization. Or, you know, there's a lot of good ones and a lot of people striving to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the words that came up to me in the process was kind of the concept of sacrifice. If you want to be part of anything big, anything worthwhile, you got to sacrifice. But what are we sacrificing? You know, if we're talking about sacrificing materialism and selfishness, and or you know, selfishness can feel like a heavy word, but even just maybe a better way to put it is self-focus. If you're sacrificing self-focus for something bigger, for that bigger picture that we were talking about before,
mm-hmm.
If I'm sacrificing my plan for my Christmas shopping when I'm at the mall for that bigger picture, you know, focus,
mm-hmm.
what am I really sacrificing? You know, if I end up finding everything for, you know, it's kind of like giving up. If you're hungry and someone offers you a day-old peanut butter and jelly sandwich, that's going to look great.
Yeah.
But if someone says, well, you can sacrifice that and have a turkey dinner, you know, with all the gravy and the mashed potatoes and the greens and the salad and some pie for dessert, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Yeah.
So to me, that's the big question is, you know, there's a lot of great stuff out there, and I think people can live their spirituality and have to be living their spirituality in every walk of life. And so for me, regardless of where we are or how we're going to do it, we can sacrifice each day, you know, the materialism, the self-focus, and what we find, I think, is just so, so, so worth it and extremely satisfying and really, you know, it just gives us a bigger picture of the richness that's already there and what's going on.
And even though I know what you mean in terms of the aspect of sacrificing to do those things, I think that when you take a look at the aspect of freeing yourself from limitations, there is no sacrifice.
Not at all. Not
at all. Because as you've just stated, I mean, some people would say, well, boy, your parents, my parents specifically, boy, they sacrificed a lot for you and your brother and sisters.
Yeah.
It's like, no, they didn't.
Right. Right.
They chose to go this direction.
Yeah.
They could have gone this way.
Because they knew
we
it was worth it.
Here.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I really, and I was born and raised Catholic, so sacrifice is a big part of
it. Is, and that word has baggage.
It does. It really does. And it's. I'm working on discovering the real me, so I can let go of some of that baggage.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been extraordinary having you on the program. Thank
it's
you so much for sharing
your
time.
Thank you.
I encourage you to find out more. And if I'm correct, first of all, you can go to christianscience.com/lecture/daily-lift, and you can listen to some of your podcasts, if you will.
Yeah, and I think there's links to other things there too.
Right, there are links to other things, but in particular, you can go and listen to Tom speak. Also, christianscience.com lectures. That's the same website there, /daily-lift. Okay, that's the same web address. So I've given it to you twice now, and you can go there and you can listen to what other things Tom has had to say over the course of, what, several months, several years?
I've been doing this about 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah.
Well, I commend you again for what you're doing and encouraging people to try to discover themselves. I noticed, though, that there's one element that's missing in the whole thing as we come to the end of our program.
Yeah.
You're not telling people where to go to do this. They don't have to go somewhere to find themselves.
No.
They did in the 60s.
Right.
I'm going off to find myself.
Right, right. Or take this drug
Exactly.
Yeah. No.
It's right here, right now. And you don't have to go anywhere, which is great because you save yourself lots of money on gas.
That's the good news.
Well, Tom McElroy, again, I thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to hearing from you again in the near future.
I look forward. forward to it.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we encourage you to tune in every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. And we stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. Go to the richarddugan.com/radioshows page, and you can listen to the archives. Until next Saturday at this time, love to all.